Howdy. Is that better? Okay. It's really good to be back here today, to be with you, to be in this pulpit. It's good. It's been a year, exactly a little over a year, that I retired, and retirement has been really good. And I was talking to Joe and Missy earlier. It's different, but it's good. It's a good different. And so we're grateful for that, grateful for the opportunity to be here today. And I was pleased when Scott asked me if I would do this. Of course, I said yes, but it's good to be here. I appreciate Joel picking some of those songs for me. I didn't submit any songs today, so I appreciate that. I appreciate the class that Joel taught today too, because for your benefit, some of the things that Joel said eliminated some of the stuff I was going to say in my lesson. He's probably saved you. He's probably saved you 15, 20 minutes anyway this morning, and you'll see that here, I think, in just a minute. Where's the rest of it? That's all you got? Huh. Maybe it's been longer than I thought. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. You see these yellow spots? That's what y'all were supposed to see. We'll be all right. In the church, we have a lot of cliches. There's a lot of buzzwords. There are a lot of phrases that we know that we are used to. We've used these phrases so often that they've just become commonplace. The problem with that is that they can become so commonplace that they lose some of their meaning. We don't give them the import that they once have. They still have their intellectual meaning, but they've lost some of the psychological impact. We've lost some of that personal connection to the scriptures. And as Joel said in his class today, it's all a story. It all works together. There's a plan. God was not a dummy when he put this together, when he gave us his word. And sometimes, though, we can read through those things. And a lot of things that Joel was talking about this morning, there's a lot of those things that we read through. We read over, and we think, well, that has nothing to do with me. I was never a Jew, or I was never in that conflict. And so we don't make the application, but it's all one story. And it's all our story that God has written into us. But there are things... if you've been in the church for any amount of time, and most of you in this room this morning have been in the church for a lot of time, you've all heard the phrase, the plan of God. Or you have heard the plan of salvation. Or there's other phrases that you have heard. The problem is... many churchgoers can't tell you what God's plan is. In fact, many churchgoers cannot even identify God's plan for themselves, let alone what the plan of God is for his church. And oftentimes, when we view church, we see ourselves as individual members of this organization, but we often don't incorporate ourselves into the overall plan of what this organization is to be about. And that's to our detriment. We miss out on so much. We don't take part in the plan that God has. People have probably told them and told others. Certainly they've heard people say, God has a marvelous plan for your life. You know, when people are struggling, they really don't care if you come up and say, well, God has a plan for your life, because a lot of times folks can't see that plan. And just throwing words at them in difficult times or times of struggle really doesn't help. Yes, God has a plan, but it's based upon, first and foremost, you have a relationship with Him. And when you understand who God is and what He wants to do with you and your life and how you individually fit into His overall plan of accomplishing His cause, His plan, then we can see how things put together. You've heard sermons about God's plan of salvation. You've heard sermons about God's plan of redemption. I can tell you this, God's plan was never for His people to sit around and talk about His plan. That wasn't the intent. God never intended for preachers to get up and preach, here's what you need to do. God's plan was for His people to do what He needed them to do. We don't get around and talk about it. If Joe served this community for years as a firefighter, if a call comes into the fire department, there's a fire over here, such and such a place, I guarantee you, Joe and his fellow firemen didn't sit around a table and say, well, let's talk about this. Okay, there's a fire over there. Yeah. Well, we know what we need to do. Yeah, we do. Well, I'm glad we had this discussion. And then go eat lunch. That'd be ridiculous. I mean, what's the point of having a fire department if they don't go fight fires? So we can talk about God's plan all we want to, but if all we're going to do is talk about it, what's the point? We need to be active. We need to be part of that plan and see ourselves in that plan, not just telling everybody else what they need to be doing about that. I have a firm belief that unless you are participating and doing what God's plan for you is, you have no business telling anyone else what they should be doing for God. I may sound harsh, but I'm retired. I can say that now. God needs His people. And I've said this many times. God needs His people to show up. He needs us to do what He's planned for us to do. We all believe that God has had a hand in human history. Although most of the time, we often think of the plan of God as some inevitable outcome that has very little to do with human involvement. That God does have a plan out there, but His will is going to come to pass whether I do anything or not. We believe it'll all work out in the end. It is what it is, which is one of the most worthless statements ever created. And, well, I won't go any further with that. We'll just say it's God's will. It is. But let me point as a side note here. There's a big difference between God's will and God's plan. God's will is for everyone to come to repentance, for everyone to be saved. God's plan is to let us decide if that's what we want to do. You need to catch the difference there. There's a huge difference between what God wills, what He wants to do, what His plan is. We work within that plan, and we need to find our role in there. This morning, I'd like for us to think about God's plan more in terms of a vision, a dream, a desire, a burning of the heart, a yearning, a passion, a commission, if you will. Because this yearning for God goes back to the beginning of time. After Adam and Eve had sent the human race on a course of sin and death, corruption. God said to them in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel. So God says that from now on, here's what's going to happen. Satan, you and the woman are going to be enemies. You and the woman are going to be enemies. They've always been at odds. I heard something this week. It just baffled me. Southern sayings. I was listening to a comedian. And he was talking about Southern sayings. And he said, do you know what it means? Southern people have a phrase that they say, or a meaning, that if it's raining outside and the sun is shining at the same time. You know the phrase? You know what the saying is for that? The devil's beating his wife? Huh? Okay, one at a time, please. Raise your hands, children. Yes. With a frying pan. Well, that's a new one on me. I didn't hear the frying pan. There'd be plenty of heat to fry something, I suppose. My question is, who would marry the devil? I don't understand that whole concept of who would say, oh, yes, dear, I can't imagine spending the rest of my life with you in hell. I just don't get that, but I don't understand the phraseology of that. But there's a lot of phrases like that. I didn't even know that was a thing. But Satan, God says, you and this woman are going to be at odds forever. And not only that, but your seed and her seed are going to be at odds forever. You're going to strike him on the heel. But he, this coming Messiah, is going to crush your head. God has a passion. And he has a plan. He has a yearning. He wants to crush the head of Satan. He wants to end the satanic veil of deceit that God has, or that has been put over the human race. So here's what I want to talk about this morning. And if my slides have been working, a big word would have come up there. Jesus says, go. Go. As we read in our text from Genesis chapter 12, I want to talk about Abraham for just a minute. God called this man Abraham, or Abram, later to become Abraham, to be an instrument of the fulfillment of his yearning, of his plan. Where would you turn in the Bible to find the Great Commission? Joe talked this morning. There's phrases in your Bible. There's lines, but there's paragraph separations. There's these little notes. Some of them have these little P things that say that this is the beginning of a new paragraph. And on and on. And Bible verses and the chapter breakdowns and everything that was put there way, way after the scripture was ever written. But if you were to go to find the Great Commission, where would you turn? Most everybody would turn to Matthew chapter 28, verse 18 and following. In fact, in your Bible, it probably says, right above that, the Great Commission. Because somebody decided, well, that's a pretty great thing to say. Let's call it the Great Commission. Okay, and it has become a biblical term that is not biblical. But we've applied it as such. That would be correct to go there, by the way. It probably, as we said, says that right in your Bible. So if it's written in your Bible, it has to be true. And that phrase is as valid as if you see it on Facebook, it has to be true. Both carry the same amount of weight as far as the validity is concerned. But that's not the first commission. To find that, you would have to go back to Genesis 12. And this is the part where Joel talked a little bit about this, so I'm leaving out some of this. Genesis chapter 12 that we read in the text this morning, I think is the first Great Commission. Genesis chapter 12, beginning verse 1, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country, from your relatives, from your father's house, to the land which I will show you. And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you. And the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed." The abruptness of that command absolutely amazes me. God didn't beat around the bush. He didn't lead up to anything. He didn't soften him up. He just says, go. Go. Get out of here. Leave. Beat it. Scram. Get out. Go. Just go. And he didn't say a whole lot other than that as far as the assignment was concerned. He offers no alluring motivations. He doesn't give any kind of a lengthy explanation for the command. He just says, go. But when a person has committed themselves to the lordship of God and is convinced that the call has come from the Lord, there's no necessity to try to entice. If someone has given themselves to the lordship of God, go is enough. That just explains what God has in store for you. And like Abraham, the response is immediate. So Abraham left. That was probably one of the most significant conversations in the history of the world. God says, go. Abraham left. And that's what it amounted to. But when you have someone who is following the plan of God and instills the plan of God in their lives, that's enough. That's what it takes to get God's will and his plan accomplished. Get out. Go, just leave, is what God told him. And we might paraphrase that command today by saying something like, go, get out of here, leave. Leave the comfort, leave the security of your country, of your family. Leave your home, leave your father's house, your cousins, your uncles, your grandmothers, your grandfathers, your smooth roads, your shopping malls. I want you to leave all of that. Your fast food, your fine restaurants, your cable TV with over 400 channels that you can only watch one at a time. Your hot showers with good water pressure, your microwaves, your coffee makers, your cars that you park in your garage attached to your house, your honest police officers, your tremendous health care system that you enjoy, your business opportunities, your plush carpet, your padded chairs, your comfort zone. Get out. Leave. And there's the rub. Because we want all those things that God says, leave. And what's worse is, we allow those things to be more important than God's plan. That's when the problem begins. I think it's interesting that God did not tell Abraham about all the trials that he's going to face when he leaves. He didn't warn him about the long trip through scorching deserts. He didn't tell Abraham, he didn't mention the resistance that he's going to face when he comes up against the king of Canaan, who were not too receptive to the notion that God had given their land to this guy, this stranger, who just walks up and says, hey, God gave me this land, leave. For some reason, that didn't sit well with them. Nor did God tell him about all the greed. God never told him about all the selfishness of his nephew Lot. whom the Lord raised as his, or the who Abram had raised as his own son. God didn't tell him how long this land showing would take, how long he was going to walk around on this mission. And I think we learn an important lesson here on the yearning of God. It requires the cooperation of his people. God has a plan. And we say, and people think, that God's in control of everything and God can do anything. Well, he could, but he can't. Because that's not his plan. His plan was for us to do his work, to do his bidding, to be his plan, to fulfill his plan. Why did God allow this person that I love die from this illness? That wasn't God's plan. That was Adam and Eve that brought that problem into the world. God never wanted that. God never intended for that. That was never part of God's plan. As Joel said, when you get away from God's plan, bad things happen. Just look at the history of the children of Israel. Just listen. They were aptly called children because they acted like it all the time. They just didn't do what their parent said to do. And God took them out for spanking. God didn't tell him all that. Abram had no clue about all that. But Abram had faith in God. And that takes care of all of that. The passion of God, if it's to ever come to fruition, requires that we become his willing instruments in his fulfillment. But God doesn't leave Abraham without a promise of blessing. In chapter 12 again of Genesis, verse 2, "And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing." I'll bless you. I will bless you. There is a blessing in getting out. There is a blessing in leaving. There's a blessing in jumping in to what God wants you to do. There is a privilege attached to God's plan. There's gain in going. In the Great Commission in Matthew 28, Jesus says, "I will be with you even to the end of the world." The blessing of his presence is a reality experienced by everyone who has ever gone into the world. God told Abraham that he would make him a great nation. That would be the ultimate dream of all the men of the patriarchal age. There couldn't have been a higher compliment given to anyone at that day and time than to say, "You're going to be the leader of a great nation." They would have been all over that. To have many children, to one day be called the father of the nation, to have people centuries and centuries and centuries later still referring to you as that leader, as that one who left to be the father of many. That's a tremendous promise. That's a tremendous privilege. And after becoming the patriarchal father of an entire nation, what more could he possibly want? God blessed him. But here's the thing that I want to focus on. God also says in verse 2, "You will be a blessing." God says, "Go, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you." And that's good, and we focus on that, and that's an important, important part of that whole passage. That's an important part of that commission. But I think something that's left that we don't recognize and we don't acknowledge and we don't take ownership of is that you will be a blessing. Not only will you be blessed in going, but you will be a blessing to others. What a privilege that is. What an opportunity that is. Go and bless. And you know what happens? You're going to be blessed as well. We need to get that message into our heads. We need to get that message into our hearts, because God has a purpose that extends far beyond you and me. We can become very short-sighted and wrapped up in our own agendas, and we don't see much further than this afternoon or tomorrow or next week. You can be a blessing to someone else. And when God calls you to go and you answer that call, you will not only be blessed, but you will be a blessing to others. It's kind of what we do in Belize. The whole point of going into Belize, and we've been doing that, this will be the 30th year. 30 years that this has been going on. This is one of the longest continuous mission efforts in our brotherhood. And y'all have been a part of it from the get-go. When James Rozier and Jane Hensley and others that were involved in getting the work going before we even went to Belize, when they were going to Jamaica. And we won't talk about that. That didn't end well. No fault of theirs. No, not that. But we got the opportunity, the call was asked, the Macedonian call that came to the ears of James and others was that we need you to come here to Belize. And that's what they did. They answered that call. And so in Matthew 9 and verse 35, that says, Jesus was going through all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. So in our Belize work, we model it after that example. We go into the villages in and around the Corozal district, and we take the message of Jesus to those villages. And we see all kinds of sickness, and we do the best we can to heal everyone that comes out. And we give healing for the body and the soul. That's the whole point. That's the whole goal. The desire, and everyone we talk about, we're going in and we are to be a blessing to these people. And that is absolutely what the reality is. We are a blessing to this people. But to a man, after we leave and we come back, what people talk about is how those people were a blessing to them. How reaching out was a blessing to them. How helping them was a blessing to them. How sitting down and talking to them was a blessing to them. Having the opportunity to give them a pair of glasses so they could read their Bible. You have no idea how precious that is until you see it. It's a blessing that comes back. And when you give people medicine that's going to bring them relief, it's a blessing that comes back. And when doctors can say, here's what's going on, here's how we can fix that, that's a blessing that comes back. When we can help the people realize that there are things that we can do, and because of the love of Jesus and the plan of God to go, we can help those folks. And that's a blessing to do. But it's a blessing that you get back when you do so. I'll share just a little bit about this. Most of you already know this after 30 years. The day is pretty straightforward. First day of clinics, we'll have registration. We have these forms. These are patient forms These are put together in conjunction with the Belize Medical Council, and we get all this information. There's four pages of that. That's 11 by 17 sheet of paper folded in half. So you have a lot of paper there. And we get all this information. Those purple numbers, everybody that comes through, every group is assigned a number. And that's how we keep track of them. They hold on to those little cards as if they're gold. And they'll sit around, they'll say, "What number are you? What number are you?" You ever seen the movie the movie Beetlejuice? And they're sitting there in hell, and he keeps looking at his number, and he looks over at you. There's times where people would like to switch to get a lower number. But we see them all. We'll see them all. And so that's what the other picture is getting that information. Getting their basic information of who they are, their height and their weight, and getting that information. And then those folks will then go to triage, where they are evaluated somewhat. We'll get vital signs. Typical blood pressure, temperature. We'll do pulse ox. We'll get as good a medical history as we can get from these people. And they come in and they'll tell us what all's going on, and there'll be families of 10, 12 come up. There'll be some individuals. Those are rare, but we do have those that come through. And so they go through triage. And after triage, they'll go see the providers, is what we call the doctors. And the doctors will then assess what's going on. And we'll talk to them about their issues. And we'll take all the time they need to do that. Dr. Choi, the man in blue, is our medical director, and he lives in Benbrook up by Fort Worth. Of course, you know Lisa. Lisa is not a doctor, but she is a doctor. She just happened to do veterinary. She taught veterinary surgery at Texas A&M University, and you know, cuts are cuts, bones are bones, and then whether it's on a dog or it's a person, there's enough there that she can. Now, when she gets into a situation where she says, "Ooh, no, if this is a dog, I know what to do," but she is really good at that. And as hard as she is hearing, she listens really well. She will sit there, and she becomes so attached to these folks. A couple more pictures of that. That lady on in the wheelchair there, she came in because she hurt her ankle. Good news is she came to the doctor. The bad news is that ankle's broken, but it was broken a little over 5 weeks before she came in. You can't go 5 weeks with a broken ankle and expect to fix it. But she didn't trust to go to the hospital to get it fixed. She waited until we got there. We met a couple other people when we made house calls that did the same thing. One of them had another one had a broken ankle. She did that the day before. So we were able to set it, we were able to put it in a splint and able to take care of that and get her to the hospital to where she could get that properly, as properly as they could, taken care of in that. But this woman's foot was broken to the point where it laid on its side, and that's how she walked, on the side of her foot. Now, that would have been easily fixed in the States. Had that happened, they could have easily have fixed that. It would have been some surgery involved in it, would have had some recovery time involved in that, but she would be able to walk. But those are just a few things. I could go on and on and on about some of the stories that we see, particularly on some of these house calls. I have a picture on my phone, if you want to see it later, of situation that we came into for a man who was in a car accident and broke his hip. If you've ever had a broken hip, or if you know anyone that's had a broken hip, this is a nightmare story. And they go to eyes. And we have top-notch professional eye team that takes care of eyes. This is Christy that you see in that first picture, and she mostly does reading glasses and sunglasses and gives those out, and I'll give you some numbers here in a little while. Judy and Susan basically run the eye clinic, and that picture is what they do most of the time. That's not really true. That's just they very seldom sit down. They're constantly running around and doing things. This is probably taken before they actually saw any patients. The nature of the clinic is they go through registration, they go through triage, they see the doctors, and then they go to eyes. And so there's a lapse between the time that people get there and they actually get to each of these stations. So consequently, there are those who start early and get done earlier. There's those who start a little later and get done a little later. So they're waiting. And there's just no other way to do that. There's just none. And after 30 years, believe me, we've tried everything we can try to make it flow, and it goes really well. But you see Susan testing eyes with this little device, and it's really handy because we can then read the numbers that they come up with. They turn the dials, they find where the eye or where the what they're looking at is clear. There's numbers on there, and then they can go to their supply and pick up this left eye is number 4 and this or minus 4 or plus 4 or whatever, and they put them together and they make glasses right there. They pop the lenses into the frames, and someone can walk away able to see that couldn't before. It's so rewarding because it's immediate. You don't see that often in the other things. You know, you take this medicine, you'll feel better. We can get rid of this rash. We can help with this. But eyeglasses, you see an immediate reward and response to that. So it's a very precious time, very emotional sometimes when you see these children who couldn't do well in school. People thought they were dumb and it was just because they couldn't see the board. They can't read. It's not because they can't read, they can't see. And when you can make that big a difference, it's impactful. Pharmacy. My pharmacy or all the medicines are going to be shipped out here in the next couple of days, and they'll be shipped directly to Belize. Jim is the white-haired man, is the pharmacist. He's from Nashville, Indiana, and has been coming several years. Last year, he had to have knee replacement surgery just before he came, but he came anyway, and he did well. He did well. He's 78 years old, but he's still kicking in there, and so we continue to do the pharmacy. And again, everything that we do is absolutely free for everyone that comes in. They don't pay anything, and that's because of the generosity of folks like you who help us either with bringing in goods such as these over here or donating money or giving of their time, and it helps us in so many ways. And so there's a lot of ways that you can participate in this mission. This is a lab, and I picked these two pictures because they're my kids, and it's my presentation, so I can do that. But Cambry has taken over as our lab tech. Russ Guest, who did that for years, died rather suddenly. He developed a brain tumor and then was diagnosed with COVID, and within 2 weeks of those two things happening, he died. Cambry was one of the few people that could sit and talk to Russ. Russ was different. I don't know of anyone who had a bigger heart for the work or for missions or for people than Russ did. But he was an old curmudgeon, boy. He was difficult, but he so good at what he did. And Cambry would go and sit and listen to him, and he would teach her what needed to do. So Cambry, I think in that picture, she's reading the urine dipstick. There's not too many people that would want to play with someone else's urine or look at their blood. And Cambry just takes to that. Rylan is a little more timid on that, but she's learning how to poke fingers and take blood to take diabetic readings. The diabetes work is one that's very, very instrumental in what we do. And Russ was the one who started the program, and we are basically the endocrinologists for so many people in the Corozal District of Belize. The Southgate Church in San Angelo, Texas, where Russ attended, continues to underwrite by financially supporting the work of the diabetic outreach. We'll take 18,000 strips and glucometers, not 18,000 glucometers, obviously, but we take 40 this last year. And we give those out to the health workers in each village, and those health workers can check the sugar for the people in their village for the year. It's not every day. It'd be best if they could do it twice a day. But the number of strips that would take would be astronomical and quite expensive, and we can't do that. So we do what we can do. And they send us money to do that, and it's made a huge difference in the numbers and in the treatments of the people in the Corozal District. So much so that in the yearly reports that they have to file with the medical council sent inspectors up there to see what was going on because they thought they were fudging their numbers because of the improvement that they saw in their diabetic patients in the Corozal District. When they explained to them what they were doing or why that was happening, the medical council called me and said, "We want you to do that in every district," which is a tremendous compliment. Financially, if anyone would like to underwrite that to about $125,000 a year, I would be happy to do that. But we do what we could do. This is the group this year. There were 34 of us from all over the place and different ages. We had them from 10 years old up to 79 years old. This year we have an 84-year-old lady going with us. But to see her work, you would think she's 60. She's dynamite. But anyway, and this year we have 40 people going, which will be the largest team we've had since COVID. It's starting to come back better. So we're anticipating doing a whole lot more this year. One of the things I'm really excited about this year is where we're going to be able to go. There are a couple of villages, one of the village of Progreso. We love that village. We've been there before. The problem with it is that to get there, you had to go across this ferry. And this ferry is basically, it's a decommissioned barge. So it was decommissioned in Belize. Let that settle for a minute. It was decommissioned 40 years ago. And so what we would do is that we would drive our vehicles up on this barge, and we only take four at a time, and there's six vehicles and a trailer this year. So we would put four of them on, we would take them across and wait, and they'd go back and get the others and bring them across, and it's a hand crank. Guy would sit there with his Popeye arm and he would take us across and then go back and then get the others and come back. And it would just take too long to get everybody across the river. This year, there is a bridge across that river, which is wonderful. You don't even have to slow down. And that bridge was built by Taiwan. So it's safe. And the engineers know what they're doing. And this bridge literally cuts an hour and a half to 2 hours off the road time one way to get to these villages on the other side of the river. So we're going to go back to Progreso this year. One of our favorite villages. Really looking forward to that. But even more than that, we're going to get to go to the village of Sartinea. And Sartinea is prohibitively far with the village, or with the ferry. But we can be there in less than an hour. It is a little further than what we normally would go. But this is a village that no one goes to. The last time a group was in the village of Sartinea, it was the United States Army that went in, and they flew in helicopters. That's the easiest way to get there. But they flew in helicopters and treated people in there. But no one goes to Sartinea, but we're going this year, and they are some kind of excited. The principal of the school we're setting up was just beside himself that when Sue and I talked to him back in March and said we'd like to bring he just cried, and he's real excited. And I think we're going to be busy. Sartinea is the third largest village in the district. There's a lot of people out there, and underserved is putting it mildly. So we're really looking forward to going to Sartinea. So it's all good. Here's what we did this last year. We had 817 patients, 5,459 prescriptions. Cambry ran 140 labs, 152 prescription glasses, 192 reading glasses, 476 adult sunglasses, 224 children's sunglasses. We gave out 27 canes, two pair of crutches, four wheelchairs, one bedside commode, six large first aid kits, 70 songbooks. That church was so excited to get these songbooks. Their books were, duct tape was no longer doing the job. There's some things duct tape won't fix after a while. So we took them 70 new songbooks, 3,000 pamphlets about the church that were distributed so people can make a connection between the work that we're doing and the church that's providing that work for them. We gave out 40 glucometers, 18,000 test strips. I don't know how much we gave when we made the house calls that we did as far as wound care and supplies, so people could go ahead and take care of other issues, the medicines, the cleaning supplies. We gave out an alternating pressure mattress that we bought here and took it for someone who is bedbound. Unfortunately, he has since died since we were there last year. And as always, we give out some cash to individuals to cover other needs. We go to a nursing home and we treat all the patients in this nursing home. And I say that like, wow, but there's only like 9 or 10 of them. I think the most that's ever been there is 12. But we treat those patients, we give them stuffed animals, we, besides going ahead and treating them and giving them their medications, but we also gave them blood pressure cups, pulse oximeters, some opportunities for them to, some training to show how they could get some of those readings and things on their own, thermometers. We gave them glucometers and enough strips to take care of their diabetic patients for the year, and we'll restock them when we're back down there. We took a lot of clothes, a lot of shoes for the folks. They needed food, so members of the team gave me money, and we ended up giving them $1,000 of cash to buy food, and to also, the day before we got there, their well caved in, and so we gave them money to help get their well repaired. And the compound, the place right across the street from the hotel, we set up a clinic there on Sunday afternoon, and we go ahead and treat those people as well. But we give them all of our leftover stuff. All of our food, people will leave their clothes, their shoes, all kinds of things that we give to them. We left them with a couple of soccer balls. Christy made goodie bags for all the women in this compound, and she was able to distribute those. We left first aid kits with every school that we were in. We gave a first aid kit to the church in Corozal and also to the Corozal Church of Christ Primary School. But all that, that's just numbers that indicates a busy week. None of that would have been possible without the love and the compassion and the dedication and the generosity and the Christ-like hearts of every one of the team members, but also of you. And those who help and those who support and those who sacrifice, not everyone can go, but others send. And that's all greatly, greatly appreciated. And so your impact on the lives of every person we treated was absolutely tremendous. And I am extremely grateful for all that you accomplished in Belize this year. So we're going back. Sue and I leave 2 weeks from today. And we'll be down there for about 10 days before some more come down. Judy and Susan and Lisa will be coming down on July 2nd. And there's five other people coming in on that day as well. We'll gather the meds, hopefully, prayerfully, get those out of the cargo hold and be able to start opening and counting and sorting and putting all those meds together. That'll be on the 2nd. The team will arrive on the 5th, and we'll start seeing patients the next day, Sunday afternoon, after church, and work all that week. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a tremendous year in Belize. So thank you. Many of you have heard the story. When I went to Belize the first time, I went because the elders here told me I was going. And on the second day that I was there, I said to myself, if I ever get out of this country, I'll never come back. God has a way of changing your priorities and your perspective on things. And it's at the point now where I can't envision myself ever leaving the country of Belize and the work there. And for many of those who have gone, it's that way. And there are those in this room have been who have helped to serve and have given of their time and energy to do that. We're still working on our building project. We have one small building of it done, our storage building. And I know it's getting close to lunchtime, but you just won't have to wait in line behind the Baptist. They'll already be through one time you get there. But first stage of that building is done, and we are using it, and it is a tremendous blessing. Stage two is a little more to it. It's going to be a 20 by 40 foot addition. It's going to cost around $58,000, and we are collecting money for that. We have about 5,000 of that right now, but we are planning some fundraising endeavors. Maybe this fall, certainly next year, to help put that together, to get that going. And eventually that'll be the James Rozier building that will be 75 feet by 100 feet, two stories, a clinic on one floor, dorm rooms on the top. Teams can go down several times a year, save a tremendous amount of money on hotel costs. It'll be a much more efficient way and a much more judicial way to use the funds that we've been blessed with. So there's a lot going on. And it'll be long after I'm no longer doing it, there'll be others who will be going and finishing the work that this congregation started and will always prayerfully, hopefully, be a part of the work in Belize. So thank you very much for that. That's all the lesson that I have. The invitation is simple. Go. That's what God said to Abram. I just need my people to go. You will be blessed, and you will be a blessing to others. Joel.